things we're dealing with are threats to humanity unlike anything the world has ever seen before.
We can bequeath our children a greener planet and a more prosperous future.
That's what climate change is about. It is literally, not figuratively, a clear and present danger.
If unprecedented changes are not made, and made soon, there will be irreversible damage to the planet.
Zero Carbon.
East Hall.
Hello and welcome to Zero Carbonista, Series 5, Just Stop the Tories. And this is the UK's number one environment-based podcast. If it's green, it is in. Dale, it's been another fan-dabba-doozy week of jip, hassle and unfathomable headlines.
Well, I like that.
Don't know where that came from.
I wasn't ready for that, but I think you're right. But I think we can fathom them, right? You throw them up and we'll fathom them out.
Well, here's the thing. We are good fathomometers, if that's the right. we can winkle out the dross and the nonsense, which has sort of become the DNA, I think, really, of this podcast, because there's very few, if anyone at all, who takes some of these swines to task when they really need to be named and shamed. But look, should we start with a nice story about Ecotricity?
Well, why not? It's been a while.
Yeah. Named as a witch-recommended provider for energy companies 2024. I mean, that's always, you know, when you do what you do, that's quite nice to get that. I know you don't dine out on this stuff because it's not in your makeup, but hey, you'd rather take that every day of the week rather than not have it, right?
But yeah, and actually, you know, if you go back maybe 8-9 years or something like that, we were in a place which we were used to from the get-go, where we had the best customer service in the entire industry. We were the greenest outcome because we were the people that built things and nobody else did. And we charged a fair price. They were our three central propositions. We dived into a big system change. It was meant to come and just jump out of the box. You know, they call this stuff, you know, it just installs out of the box. 5 years later, right, we were grinding through this transition from one system to another, and it killed our customer service. So actually, what this shows, because it's about customer service, is that we're back on top. We're in the top three now of energy companies in the country, and we're still heading upward. We will get back to number one spot, and it's been a long time in the making.
So what, to just go over that again, Dale, what was the bit that scuppered it in the middle?
IT. Ah. Systems, gremlins, like, that we have on the show sometimes, but these were just, you know, slightly bigger gremlins. And you know, something that should have took 6 months took nearly 5 years, I think, and in the meantime made it really hard for us to give good service, but we're on top of that now. So that's what Witch says to me. It says we've done it. We're back to where we need to be. And it coincided, coincidentally, actually, with the launch of a TV ad, something we've never done before, which was a bit of fun. I'm not sure if we talked about it on a previous episode, but I was standing on top of an 80-meter windmill talking to a drone, actually. And trying not to look down.
Yeah, that would have been horrifying, wouldn't it? Did you look? Was there a point?
I didn't know. Absolutely didn't.
You definitely didn't look down, because I would have had that, because I would have shared exactly your concerns. But there would have been a point when I'd have thought, no, I'm going to look down.
I'm looking down.
I'm going to look down.
Yeah. Well, look, I mean, the top of a wind turbine is curved plastic, and I hadn't gone prepared. I didn't know I was going to climb it, so I had slippy shoes on, and I got myself stood on top of this thing. I planted my feet in a kind of strong stance that I could hold, and I didn't move for 20 minutes. I just talked to this drone as it came in and out of kind of range and stuff, and I thought, I'm not looking anywhere. I'm not doing anything. I'm just going to, like, focus on this and get it done.
Yeah.
That's what I did.
You mentioned gremlins. I'm going to raise you a beaver and a red squirrel. What about that?
I love it. When is the gremlin going to be extinct, right? We've lost all these wonderful species.
Yeah.
Why can't gremlins go extinct?
They hang on in there, don't they? They've got special powers. I think that's what it is. It's all about the water. Culture wars by ministers over the reintroduction of animals, such as the beaver and the lynx, must end if we are to restore nature in England. This is according to the government's head of the task force on the issue. Dr. Andy Clements.
Another taking to task of the government by its own task force. That never happens, does it?
Very I love it when it does, though. It gives you a little bit, it's a sort of scintilla of hope in democracy, that they've employed somebody to go, you can run our task force. And the guy you employed goes, yeah, you're shit. It's brilliant. So something works.
It is brilliant.
What's the story here, then?
Well, just playing politics, really, with the kind of overwhelmingly impactful and popular idea of bringing back animals like the beaver. For example, this government talk about the beaver and the lynx in the same kind of sentence or breath, and they're not linked at all. you know, beavers are, well, they're obviously very different animals, but in terms of rewilding, they don't belong in the same conversation. We're involved in some beaver rewilding down in Sussex, actually. We've got a couple of 100 acres of woodland that we're going to bring back pine martens and red squirrels and beavers. You know, these are creatures that aren't quite extinct in our country, but certainly very close to it, and they belong here. The lynx is also something that belongs here, but we haven't seen for a very long time. But it's just a different thing, kind of frequently linked to wolves as well. This is what the government like to do. They say, oh, we don't want lynxes and wolves, you know, and it plays on people's
fears.
Yeah, fears.
Well, hang on a second. Look, I think, like, let me just put this out there. I think you're the man to reintroduce the wolf, Dale. If anyone was going to do that, it's you. I love a wolf. They're lovely bits of kit. They're very intelligent. They do, you know, what it says on the tin. Yes, they will take your throat out if you look at them the wrong way, but they largely keep themselves to themselves. They used to be native in this country, and they are no longer, because humans killed them, basically.
Yes. I don't think this will come across on the podcast, but let me try and describe this cartoon or illustration that I saw of a wolf approaching a campsite of some ancient humans and being offered some food to tempt it in. And in a thought bubble, the wolf has a picture of a pug and the words, "What could possibly go wrong?"
I love it. The other one I think we should bring back is the saber-toothed tiger. I mean, where's that thing been hiding for many years?
I have no idea.
That only ever came up at school when you learned about cavemen, didn't it? You think, wow, that's a look at the teeth on that beauty. I'd have some of that back in, you know, maybe just in, I don't know, Hertfordshire or something.
You remind me, I bought a megalodon tooth the other week. I was in London and bumped into this fossil stall. Amazing guy, really interesting. He goes around the world hunting fossils, and there's this big tooth on his desk there, and it comes from a Meg. I don't know if you've seen the film Meg and Meg 2 with, what's his name? Guy with no hair and lots of muscles.
Kojak?
Yeah, him, yeah, that's it, yeah. The other one. Actually, there's a few of them.
Yeah, Megalodon's the big shark thing, isn't it, right?
Yeah, so big. I mean, you know, it's like so big. To call it a big shark is doing it an injustice. By the way, this tooth was 2.5 million years old.
That's insane.
I mean, that's a bit shocking.
How big's the tooth? I mean, can you use it for something? Is there a use?
Probably not. No, just a talking point. It's a tooth for a talking point.
That's good. Do you carry it around with you?
No, I gave it to my boy. Gave it to my boy.
Do you want to see my tooth? I like it. So this question from Dr. Medea, who says, and I was about to say it's a bit of a schoolboy question, but I don't say it as a pejorative. It's an obvious question, but it's still a good question. If we all drive electric cars, will the national grid be able to cope?
Oh, yeah, it's a good question. And, you know, it's a question that we first asked ourselves back in 2008 when we were designing the Nemesis, you know, Britain's first electric car and all that stuff, when there were no electric cars in the world. Before we did it, we wanted to make sure that it wouldn't be a niche thing that only a few people could have an electric car. So we studied two things. First was, is there enough lithium in the world for everybody to have an electric car? The answer came back resoundingly yes. And the second was, could the grid cope? And we did the research, and if all 30 million cars in Britain were electric, we found something like a 10% increase in grid-delivered electricity was required. And at the time, every year, the amount of electricity delivered through the grid went up about 3% a year anyway. So it was about 3 years of normal growth or something like that. So very doable. And it turns out, of course, if you fast forward to today, new technology means electric cars can support the grid by giving power back at times of high demand. And that just has changed the whole outlook completely.
But in terms of where we are now, if tomorrow everybody had an electric car, would we'd be in a bit of trouble, would we?
I don't think we would, because most home charging of electric cars happens in the evening when demand for electricity drops considerably. So it's off-peak demand for electricity. So it will help smooth the grid in terms of raising the load factor of the grid. You know, with modern tech, we can also give back from cars as well. But I mean, the short answer is no, it's not a problem at all. It's like range anxiety. You can consign that to the dustbin of history. I went to Norfolk yesterday in an electric car. What a breeze. Honestly, it's a 4 or 5 hour trip from where I was. And there were just brilliant charges everywhere. 20 minutes, cup of tea, jump in your car and you're ready to go.
Superb. You had a visitor down there at Forest Green Rovers, Shadow Secretary of State for Sport and Culture.
Oh, yeah. Thangam Debonair. That was on Saturday. We didn't win,
She always said, did she bring good vibes with her from the Labour benches?
Definitely that. But we didn't.
It was only one goal you conceded, as I remember.
Yeah, just one goal. And
Accrington Stanley, right?
Yeah, and it was a really unfortunate penalty. We were bossing the game. This is the first game under the new manager. We looked completely different. Just unfortunate that we gave away a penalty in the first half, and it was a mountain that we couldn't climb to get back into it. We made some brilliant chances. I mean, honestly, it was an exciting game. So it felt to me like a draw. That's why I was confused a minute ago.
Yeah.
I thought, oh, yeah, we drew. No, we didn't. We lost, but it felt like a draw.
You're away to Colchester on Saturday.
I'm definitely away.
But will you be in Colchester? There's the question.
I was just going to say, Green Football Weekend, right, is finally happening after all the talk and all the build-up. That's the weekend of Green Football Weekend.
Here's another story. Biden stops the largest fossil fuel bailout in U.S. history following campaign pressure. The Biden administration has temporarily halted the approval of new licenses to export U.S. liquefied natural gas to study the impact of these shipments on climate change.
Yeah, it's an incredible piece of news, talking about disrupting the spending of billions of dollars in these oil or gas projects.
Yeah.
And I think you've got a typo in your readout. It's not a bailout, a build-out. He's stopping the build-out.
So I thought the build-out was a typo. So I said, change it to bailout. I did see it. I thought, what the f*** is that?
I love that.
A build-out? What's a build-out?
So, and this is the largest fossil...
I've been double typoed here.
you have. It's the largest fossil fuel build-out in U.S. history, or it would have been, and it ain't now. It's going to be the largest cancelled build-out in fossil fuel history in the U.S.
Wow.
Fabulous. So fair play to him, right? Because he's got an election coming up. He's fighting the rabid Donald Trump, who's obviously pro everything that's bad for the world, including oil and gas.
Lucy says, do you think the next government should examine the impact of Tufton Street think tanks regarding where their funding comes from and their influence on politics and the media? These are people like the Taxpayers Alliance, and they've got there's an environment one as well, and a couple of others. And they often come under the microscope for not declaring, it's alleged, who funds them.
Yeah, I think there was one last week. I don't know if they're based in Tufton Street, but they funded the study that the Telegraph ran with to say basically the Tories are doomed unless they, I don't know, get tough on small boat crossings across the Channel, which you've got to think, well, how much tougher can they get except to send the Navy in to sink them? Some kind of paranoia in the Tory pie that it was feeding to. It's not something a lot of people know about Tufton Street, place, one building in a street, actually, where a lot of these shadowy, shady think tanks operate from, with names that usually are misdescribing what it is they do, like the Taxpayers Alliance.
The Emporium for Environmental Consideration. And you think, wow, these are the guys we need to talk to. They're going to solve all the problems.
Yes.
And you realize that it's the very reverse of what you thought they might stand for.
Yes, reverse naming is just incredible. But I think looking where the funding comes from, yeah, sure, why not? And the influence they have, sure, why not? I don't think there are any actual crimes going on there except the crime of dishonesty.
Well, it's whether, and people often say, when I've interviewed people from those think tanks, we always get a flurry of emails saying, but who funds these people? Because we need to know that before we can really decide how authentic their view was. I know that lots of the speakers are, really decent, quite switched on people, and they're allowed to have that view that might be different to other people's.
Mm.
But transparency in funding, I don't think anybody could really create an argument as to why that's a bad thing.
Yeah, that's right. And this example last week of the poll that showed the Tories being obliterated at the next election was funded by some secret people. One of the Tories, was it Duncan Smith? I think he was fronting.
Yes.
He refused to name them. That's like, well.
Yeah, I think it was the Conservative campaign for obliterating the Tories. Yeah. I mean, the clue was there for anybody who cared to look, really.
Yes.
What about this one, Dale? World's largest cruise ship sets sail from Miami. This is the Icon of the Seas, the world's largest ship. Capacity to carry 8,000 people. Can you think of anything worse than being stuck on a boat with 8,000 other people? 20 decks. It's 1,198 feet in length. The Royal Caribbean states that the ship is 24% more energy efficient than required by the International Maritime Organization. Are these the good guys, Dale?
Well, that's a good question. And firstly, no, I can't imagine anything more horrific than being stuck on that boat like that. Well, as soon as I read something like that, it's 24% more efficient than required by these people, I think, well, these people, right? Have they set a particularly high bar? I suspect that they haven't. And this 24% is not hard to achieve. Yeah, the next ship they plan, by the way, is going to be in about 10 years' time. They're planning a net zero ship. I don't know quite how. I mean, I know what they say. They say they're going to do something with trapping emissions. But, you know, that's what every fossil fuel burning fool says, isn't it? Don't worry, we'll capture our emissions. Everything will be fine.
When I saw a picture of this thing, you've seen this thing, yeah?
Yeah.
I thought what had happened, somebody had photoshopped it. You know, somebody had put a genuine picture, I don't know, of Abramovich's yacht, and then someone else had parodied that and gone, oh, here's Timmy Mallett's yacht or ship. And this crazy playground of a cruise ship with water slides and coloured neon deck chairs, and it looked like, you know, something that Pontins would say, well, we wouldn't do that. It was just horrendous. It was a kind of optical assault, aside from anything else, let alone being stuck on this bloody thing.
It was like a fever dream, wasn't it? But here's the thing about these cruise ships. It's worth thinking about. Maybe, you know, not enough people do. They shit in the oceans. Imagine 8,000 people dumping somewhere in the ocean, because that's what happens. All this, they don't keep their shit on board, these ships.
Exactly. So aside from making the thing bloody move, which is, you know, just churning out I don't know how many millions of tons of crap, you've also got the human contribution to that, as you rightly say, which is pretty horrible, really.
I mean, it's a small city's worth of people, right, dumping on your coastline.
Yes. I mean, I don't imagine the dolphins are happy about that.
It's pretty grim. It's pretty grim. They should have a responsibility, like water companies, to like deal with the sewage that happens on their ship. Do you know what I mean?
Indeed.
Rather than just dump it in the ocean. But that's one of the things about the seas. You know, at the moment, you know, it's kind of one of the wild frontiers of environment regulation. True. The dirtiest fuel, they're allowed to burn it, and yeah, they just dump the ship.
Didier says, should Starmer bring back any big political beasts if he becomes the next prime minister, and if so, who? I know you're aching to say Tony Blair, aren't you?
That would probably be the popular one, wouldn't it? Not.
Yeah, not.
But you know, I'm a fan, actually, not of everything he did, because he did some bad things, like, you know, the Iraq War, for example. But he did some good things. But I'm a fan of his for his communication skills. I'm not saying bring him back, actually. I think that I wouldn't advocate bringing anybody back. I would say, like, you could never step in the same river twice, right? That old Zen Buddhist thing.
Yes.
And, you know, Starmer should set about creating his own big beast. And I think in his cabinet, he's got people that will become, you know, the next big beast. And that's where I'd think to look.
On a related note, Darius says, which Tory are you most looking forward to seeing losing their seat at the next election?
Yeah, that's a tough list, isn't it? You know, there's got to be at least 200 of them.
No, I love that. Darius only asked for one, and it turns out there's 200 on the list.
The whole cabinet, right? Well, they deserve worse than losing an election for what they've done and what they're doing to our country and what they will do before they finally hold this election.
Another story here, Dale. EU fossil fuel CO2 emissions hit a 60-year low.
Yeah, I mean, these guys are knocking it out of the park, aren't they? I want to say that. I think to a degree this will be influenced by the war in Ukraine, because in the EU, a lot of real serious steps were taken to reduce consumption of fossil fuels, unlike in Britain, where our government said, use what you like, but by the way, we'll have power cuts, which is just the dumbest thing. Rather than have big government, we got power cuts. We didn't quite get them, but we could have. Anyway, the EU have... I think they cut their energy consumption by 15%, or gas anyway, and that is bound to be in this figure, this 8% drop in the last 12 months. You know, it's just good news, isn't it? Meanwhile, we've got China reaching peak emissions, I think, next year or something like that. And after that, it's in steady decline. And the rate at which they build renewable energy will actually keep pace with the rate of energy consumption growth in China, which is, you know, a pretty stunning place to be as well. So, just a piece of good news to end on, nothing to whinge about here.
Final question. Shannon says, what advice would you give to young activists who are passionate about tackling climate change and promoting sustainability based on your own journey? Because you've done a fair bit of, you were doing this before people even, before the word campaign even existed.
I was doing this when we were all living in caves, and I was saying, don't leave the cave. Hundreds of years from now, you'll regret that, because right-wing radio commentators will say, you all want us to live in caves. Advice is such a tricky one, right?
Don't stop is a good advice, right?
Don't stop. Yeah, don't give up. Don't listen, right? Don't listen to people that tell you, oh, you shouldn't be saying that, you shouldn't be doing this, or you know, keep your voice down or something like that, right? This is our planet, and what happens, you know, in the future that is currently on course to make it unlivable for us and future generations is unacceptable. And we should not be quiet and go quietly into that, right? F them all, these people that are doing that. So I say, speak out, do your thing, do whatever it is you can do. Hopefully between us, we'll win.
Indeed. Dale, fabulous stuff. We will speak in a week.
Cool, I can't wait. I'll try and get my head together before then.
No, it's all sounding great at this end. That's it for this particular episode. Don't forget to follow this podcast from your podcast provider so that you get each new episode automatically. And follow Dale on social media. That's twitter.com/DaleVince, facebook.com/DaleVince, and on TikTok too.
Zero Carbon. East off.